Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The U.S. military has announced the end of a 19-year ban on women in combat, a decision that has sparked a whole new conversation about gender roles and why any job should be off limits to women. Still, there are naysayers out there, including the president of the Center for Military Readiness, who said the change was irresponsible. For the same reason you don't see women in the NFL, you shouldn't see women in combat units, she said. Women are not the equal of men. Today we'll examine the role of women in the military and a new book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewoman in Today's Military. With us is the author of that book, Tanya Bianc, who also wrote the book Army Wives, which has been turned into a series on the Lifetime Network. She is a daughter, sister, and wife of Army colonels. And Tanya, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us today are two currently enlisted women from the Army and Fort Leavenworth, is Sergeant Nicole Davis. Sergeant, nice to have you, and thanks for coming on today. And also here from Whiteman Air Force Base is Senior Airman Stephanie Holt. Stephanie, nice to have you, too.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Well, I want to begin with Sergeant Nicole Davis. When this new policy was announced, allowing women in combat, it was seen as significant, but also an acknowledgement of what's already been happening out there. Women already have been serving in combat roles. Tell us about that.
The announcement, it didn't surprise many of us simply because of the changing face of our combat lifestyle in the military. There's no longer any really declared front lines, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And some of the positions that we as women have been put in kind of make us out there with the same guys who go into combat and get put into the combat MOSs.
What kinds of positions are you talking about?
From our transportation NCOs, a lot of female. You have a lot of supply NCOs that are female. They have to get the things to, you know, the guys out on the so-called front lines, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And they're just as exposed and just as likely to come into contact of, you know, various sorts. So it's not that we are not in combat. It's just we're not allowed to have those titles placed upon us or go into the MOSs that could be deemed, I don't know, more dangerous than they would like us to be.
Well, Sergeant, explain one more thing you just said. There are no front lines anymore. You sort of hear that a lot in connection with this conversation about women in the military. What do you mean by that exactly?
I can give you a scenario. If I were to have to go from one location to another, and it's not somewhere that there's active fighting, there's still many chances that we could come upon fire, that someone could attack us, and I'm in that convoy. I'm a woman. I'd be expected to perform just like any of the other soldiers. I'm trained like they are when those situations come up, and I will perform like they will in that situation.
Yeah. Tanya Bianc, author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have sort of changed the equation. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, absolutely. Since 9/11, 250,000 women have deployed. And they've served side by side with men, and they've been an integral part of the mission.
And so is the service sort of ready for this change? Have you noticed changing attitudes inside the military when it comes to that, Tanya?
Yes, yes. There has certainly been a cultural shift within the military that is still going on. And what you will find today, Steve, is that your battlefield commanders want the most talented, most capable soldiers. They want to pick from a pool of the very best soldiers to do a specific job or to be in their unit, regardless of gender.
Hmm. Let's go to from Whiteman Air Force Base, Senior Airman Stephanie Holt. To what extent have you noticed the attitudes changing in the years you've been in the military? And maybe I should begin by asking, how long have you been in the military?
I've been in the military for about 6.5 years now.
So for a little while, yeah.
Yes, sir. And honestly, the attitudes that I've seen, then again, what I do, we do convoys. So the attitudes towards women in that aspect are pretty much non-existent. We're expected to go out there and do exactly what these men are doing. Our training is the exact same. We don't get segregated in training. We don't
get... You train with the men these days?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
100%. We get combined from all bases all over the United States, and we are expected to come together as a group, men, women alike. I mean, there is no gender when we're training. We are expected to pull these people out of vehicles. We're expected to know how to, if something happens, we are expected to know how to react and to respond.
So, Airman Hold, you're saying that the walls have come crumbling down here, and they've been down for a while.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
And while she's saying that, you're nodding your head, Nicole. Same thing.
Yes, I definitely agree. It's never been my experience that my male counterparts expect me to bow out of any type of training or any type of mission simply because I'm a female.
You're not catching any breaks.
I'm not catching any breaks at all. It's one thing to have a serious issue, but we all, male or female, have serious issues where, you know, we can't perform. But when it comes down to you're perfectly sound in mind and body, then you're going to perform as a soldier, regardless of what your sex is.
But what can't you perform that the men can? What's sort of regarded as off limits these days?
In my field and in my training that I've done for well over 12 years now, nothing's been really off limits to me. We do a lot of the physical endurance, a lot of the challenges that the males do. And if anything, we're actually cheered on. We're encouraged. We're, you know, they're seeing us as part of the team when we actively get out there and prove that, you know what, I might not come in with the same numbers as you come in with, but I will work just as hard as you will and succeed.
You know, Tanya Bianca, you have pointed out that in the Air Force, 99% of jobs are open to women. In the Navy, it's 88%. In the Marines, it drops down to 68%. And in the Army that Nicole was just talking about, it's just 66%. I'm wondering what jobs, from your experience, are women not allowed to do these days?
Well, the jobs are in the combat arms branches, the infantry, the armor branches, special forces, rangers, your SEALs units. And since this policy ban was lifted January 24th,
right,
those jobs are now going to be open to women. For example, there's never been such a thing as an infantry woman, an 11 Bravo in the Army before. And now there will be. That is the big change, and that is also part of the big cultural change, because those units have been all male up until this point.
So, Tanya, you're saying even the SEALs now, the Navy SEALs, the renowned Navy SEALs, will be open to women?
It depends. What has to happen now is that if there is a reason that those specialized units should not be open to women, then military leaders are going to have to make that case to the Joint Chiefs of Staff of why they should remain closed. So the military has until May, the service branches have until May to come back with their implementation plans to the Department of Defense, and then the service branches have until 2016 for full implementation of integrating women into these units.
Yeah. You know, Tanya, again, for the sake of some context here and for the sake of some perspective, given the fact that, you know, we're hearing from Nicole and Senior Airman Stephanie Holt that this change has sort of been in the works for a number of years, give us some perspective here. Just how big of a deal is this whole thing then, now that it's happened? How big of a deal is it?
It's truly a landmark and historic moment. And I think when you look at service women and change to the status quo over the years, it has always made headlines, and it's always brought controversy. If you look back to 1967, women could make up no more than 2% of the armed forces, nor could they rise above the rank of lieutenant colonel or commander. And when the Department of Defense changed that, they were criticized for that. Also, when women were admitted to the service academies in 1976, there were many, many vocal critics who thought that women should not be there. And I'm sure that there are still critics today who believe that pregnant women should be kicked out of the service, and that's exactly what happened prior to 1975.
It's a big
deal.
And pregnant women today, Tanya, are handled how?
Pregnant women are given maternity leave, and there are maternity uniforms that they wear. Actually, in my book, Major Candace O'Brien, part of her story was her being pregnant. She was actually pregnant during all of her her company command, and then she had a second child while she was serving, and her husband was in Iraq when she gave birth that time, and then she ended up deploying to Afghanistan with her two young children, 2 and 4 years old.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. If you're just joining us, we're talking about this new historic order that now has lifted the end of a 19-year ban on women in combat. And we're wondering, did the Obama administration make the right call by allowing women in combat roles? What do you think? Or do you think this is as irresponsible? It's akin to allowing women to play in the NFL. We'd like to hear your opinion. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Now, Airman Stephanie Holt from Whiteman Air Force Base, how was this news greeted on the base, and what was the reaction when you heard the word? What did you make of it?
Well, honestly, it wasn't a huge surprise as you may think. Again,
because we're talking about it's been in the pipeline for a while.
Yeah, it has. And so the attitudes really haven't changed. They're embracing it.
Did you all have a party that night? This is an historic moment. Did you have a party?
Honestly, no. I'm looking forward to the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of us are, and the implementation of the lifting of the ban.
But it sounds like you're saying, though, this isn't going to change that much because things have been this way for a while.
Oh, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and as you said, the Air Force has had 99% of the career fields open since 1994.
Mm-hmm.
So this less than 1%, it's a small window for the opening.
Well, Airman Holt didn't party very much. Sergeant Davis looks like more of a partier to me. Did you party that night when you heard this? Was this celebrated in any sort of way?
We were just glad. Those of us who got together we were kind of celebrating in our own way that the paperwork finally caught up with the mindset that's already had started to change anyway.
Yeah.
So making it official gave us that boost, that encouragement that we're not seen as second class citizens any longer within. Mm-hmm. These organizations, we will be utilized to our fullest capability. We've always thought that we're an untapped resource to the military. So mm-hmm. now that they've straightened everything out, they've corrected this, we'll be stronger for it, we believe.
Tanya Bianc, did you sense much celebration across the country when this order came down?
The service women I spoke with about this, there was a range of opinions because service members are all individuals, and it ranged from excitement to surprise to also consternation of how is this actually going to be implemented. This will be a huge change for the combat arms branches.
How are the men taking this news, Sergeant? What are you hearing?
Mostly it's been just about time for the ones who I've actually had the chance to sit down and talk to about this.
They're pretty open to it.
Very open to it. And finally, we're being held to their same standards, officially being held to their same standards, saying that there's no difference between myself or someone else. I wanted to clear up something.
Yeah.
I've heard it said over and over that, we're finally letting women serve in combat. We don't just let anyone serve in these combat MOSs. They have to go through the same training and the same rigorous schooling that anyone does. We're letting them have the opportunity, just as everyone else has, the opportunity to train in order to be awarded this MOS or this job.
Mm-hmm.
So the statement, we are letting women in combat services, we're actually letting them apply for combat service.
Airman Holt, what's been the reaction from the men that you've talked to on over at Whiteman?
The same. I agree with Sergeant Davis. It's about time. It's okay. Now they are afforded the same. They're going to be held to the same standards. They're going to be held to. They're going to have the same responsibilities. And there's that small percentage of women that are actually, that are going to be capable of doing this small range of MOS that they weren't afforded to before. And
mm-hmm.
I agree that I like that they're going to be held to those same standards. The biggest concern is are they going to end up lowering the standards? to these women, you know, down the road.
Should they?
I don't believe so, no.
And you're shaking your head too, Sergeant Davis.
No, not at all. I mean, if you feel that you can do the job and you go and you train and you are able to pass the test that states that, yes, you are able to do this job, you should be able to do the job, whether you're a man or a woman.
Yeah. It sounds like you feel that just about anything that a man can do, you can do too.
If afforded the opportunity, I would like the chance to see if I could do it.
For example, what would you like to see if you could do?
I would like to see if being able to outshoot in on the range. Mm-hmm. I'm a great shot, but there's a lot of those MOSs, such as the specialties, the snipers and whatnot, that we weren't allowed to even apply for the schooling for. So that'd be something interesting to see if I can push myself to be at that level.
Yeah. Well, let's get our listeners involved here. Was this whole policy too late, or is it about time here? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. You know, is there anything about this new policy allowing women in combat roles, Tanya, that gives you pause, gives you any hesitation? Is there any doubt in the back of your mind when it comes to placing women on the battlefield that there's no issue there?
I don't think so. I think it's an affirmation of where the military's been headed, and it will be up to the leaders in the units to implement these changes and to expect professionalism from the infantry soldiers and the armor soldiers. I think that for men and women, whoever is qualified to do a job, they should be able to serve. And the Department of Defense is looking at gender-neutral standards, how much strength and endurance is needed to do a specific job. What will be interesting is to see if some of these young men can meet that new standard instead of just automatically being allowed into an infantry unit because he happens to be male.
Hmm. Interesting. Airman Stephanie Holt, anything that gives you a pause or hesitation here?
Just like I had stated earlier, that eventually they will look at those standards and they'll start lowering them for mm-hmm. the women. When it comes to combat situations, that's life or death.
Yeah.
And so lowering those standards means, are you going to lower them across the board for the men and women? Or are you going to continue to hold men to a higher standard than you're going to hold your women to mm-hmm. when you are letting them into these career fields now?
Sergeant Davis, how about you? Any hesitation?
Only in the, as Aaron Holt was saying, in the umbrella that you're putting over this MOS, are we going to be...
MOS being?
The military-specific job that you're training for,
mm-hmm.
For the combat ones, are we going to be held to a certain level and then stopped there?
Yeah.
Or can we continue on and go as far as we feel that we are capable to go?
Let's get our listeners involved here. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Terry. Terry, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
And you are a retired Army, right?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm retired first sergeant, Master Sergeant E8.
Okay.
I suppose my concern now, the caveat for me is that I entered the military in 1973. And then I retired in 1993. And as everyone probably realized, that was a tremendous change in the Army during those years. We watched women were not allowed to be married in the military. We were allowed to be married. Then we were not allowed to have children. There's been a lot of social experimentation, and that is my problem, because when women who are excellent soldiers do meet the standard, it becomes mandatory then. It's no longer voluntary.
Okay.
And so for what I see is, for whatever reason, if a woman soldier said, Now, I don't want to be in a combat unit, but the Army says, yes, you can, and there's precedence for it, so therefore we'll let you, or we'll just out-process you, make you a civilian. The airman, I believe, she has brought up a very good point. My experience has been all through the time that I was in, either the standards were lowered or they were changed in mm-hmm. some fashion so that women could compete for those types of positions. Now, I don't have a problem, I suppose, with women driving aircraft or ships mm-hmm. or any of those things in a combat situation, because the equipment that they're using is the leveler, okay? Mm-hmm. The guy flies the same aircraft that's in a combat soiree.
Right.
And I think that's okay, because a woman's reflexes are every bit as good as a male's, and he's using a piece of equipment that she is using. Now, when you put boots on the ground, you put a huge pack on, you have weapons, you're in the desert, you're walking, you're with, you may be the only woman with in a squad of Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
They have to move fast. There may be, now, and to be sure, I will tell you there's probably a few women that if they increased the standard or kept the standard the same, that may be able to, be able to join a Ranger
mm-hmm.
outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That, I don't believe, is the norm. And it's not the norm that men soldiers are able to go into special forces or Rangers or a lot of everything, because they just can't. They can't do the mental stamina. They can't do the physical stamina.
So your point is, a lot of women won't make it, and a lot of men can't do it either.
Exactly. And I mm-hmm. have a son who is in special forces right now. And I will tell you that here's another facet of this. And this is going to sound probably very sexist. I don't want my young men led by a woman in combat in a boots to the ground situation.
We're getting some eyebrows raised here in the studio here, just so you know, Terry.
Oh, I know. And
just be more succinct for me, Terry. Why do you feel that way?
Because it's tantamount to having their mother take them to war.
Hmm.
Young men should be led by young men.
Okay, let me get some reactions here, Terry, to what you're saying. Stephanie, you are shaking your head. Go ahead. Let her rip.
I apologize. I disagree on this, because as of right now, they are saying that the women are going to be held to the same standards as men.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very small group of men that get to call themselves Rangers, that get to call themselves Special Forces, that get to call themselves paratroopers, etc. These women that are going to be able to apply to these positions are going to be held to the same exact standards right now. That's what the lift on the band states,
mm-hmm.
is they are going to be held to those same exact standards. So think about that very small number of women that are going to prove themselves. Now,
and there will be some, you think?
Oh, I do believe so. 100% I believe
so. What about Terry's idea here? She's hesitant about women leading male soldiers in infantry-type roles.
Can I jump in there for a minute?
No, hang on a second, Terry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
I think if they have proven themselves against all odds and against every doubt that they have been given, and they make that small number and have proven themselves just as good as the guys, why shouldn't they lead? They have proven above and beyond what they are capable of.
Tanya Bianchi, go ahead. I'm sorry. Hop in there.
Yes, yes. Interesting point. In my book, Lieutenant Bergen Flanagan, platoon leader, MP platoon leader in Afghanistan, she chose military police because it was the closest branch she could get to the combat arms. Okay, her soldiers who I interviewed and who are in the book, it did not matter to them that she was a woman or a man. What mattered to them was if she could do her job as the platoon leader. Okay? She was not in the combat arms branches, but guess what? She toted an M4 carbine with attached to a M203 grenade launcher with a 9mm pistol strapped to her leg. She was on daily foot patrols, some mounted, some dismounted, with one of her two squads. Very dangerous. She ended up losing her leg in Afghanistan. An amazing thing about her is that she's now Captain Flanagan, and she has remained in the military, and her goal is to command an MP company. She was the leader of men and women soldiers. It did not matter in combat.
Sergeant Davis, you were shaking your head, too, when Terry was making her comment about her hesitancy about women leading male soldiers and on the ground. What's your reaction there?
I've deployed twice, both to Iraq in the period of 2009, and we closed out helped close out Iraq in 2011, but both deployments, different leadership. Started out with a female commander. She was there with us training while we were back at stateside, trained us all the way up to our deployment, deployed with us, was there just like any other commander would be. We got the same thing from her that we would from a male commander. During that time, during 2009, I had the opportunity to go from one of my camps to a small outpost in Erbil, Iraq. And once I got there, I was surprised to realize it was a combat unit. Their mission, I don't know if I'm at liberty to say or whatnot, but they had a female commander. 43 male soldiers, 3 female soldiers, including me, when my time was there. The other female soldier, she was a fueler. So whenever her job entailed her to go out with these guys, yeah, her job was as a fueler, but she was at just as much risk as all the others and was expected to perform if, you know, things went wrong. It's not so much as we can't command. We've proven that we can. It's not so much as we're not as strong. In some ways, we're stronger. But unless you give us the opportunity to prove this and to, you know, show you what we can do, we will never know.
And you're going to get that now, though, right?
Yes.
And okay.
Like any other change, there's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be, you know, obstacles to overcome. But not even entertaining the idea is really denying a part of our armed forces the chance to excel.
This hour, we're talking about women in the military, the new policy that just came down a few weeks ago that ends a 19-year ban on women in combat. We're visiting with Tanya Bianc, who's written a new book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. We're also talking with two currently enlisted women from Fort Leavenworth and the Army, Sergeant Nicole Davis, and from Whiteman Air Force Base, Senior Airman Stephanie Holt. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Ray from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning. You there, Ray? Let's go to Holly from Gardner. Holly, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I am impressed with the speakers that you have on your show right now, showing the restraint that they have, because your last caller, I was very upset with her remarks. As a 34-year-old woman, I can't believe I'm even hearing someone say that that they would prefer to have a woman not be a leader in a combat situation when boots are on the ground. I'm just so incredibly disappointed and angry that someone would have that opinion this day and age. The whole reason that this policy change is happening is so that women have the opportunity to lead, and yes, to possibly even make mistakes if they weren't in a combat situation and leading on the ground. But they don't even have those opportunities if these policies don't change. And she even said herself that she experienced the sexism and the literal like injustice and oppression that she experienced when she was in the military for those 20 years without those policy changes taking effect.
That's right. And Holly, let me just interject here that, you know, that caller was not the only person expressing that viewpoint. Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness, that's a group that studies military personnel policies. She's called this change irresponsible. And she said, for the same reason you don't see women in the NFL, you shouldn't see women in combat roles. Women are not the equal of men. That's what Elaine Donnelly has said.
It is infuriating.
Okay.
It's frustrating and disappointing. And I think it bleeds into larger social societal issues, including how could we possibly imagine putting a woman behind the desk at the White House. I think it all is linked together in a frustrating image of society today, and I just think it speaks volumes. And I just thank all of our service women and men for all that they do. And it's a frustrating situation that we still have people that are trying to tamp down the great things that they're doing.
Holly, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Joe from Leawood wrote us this at UpToDate@KCUR.org. The recent announcement is an acknowledgement of reality. In Iraq, when female soldiers were assigned to search and detain female Iraqis during house-to-house searches, they were in direct action in firefights. This means this woman was not getting the same pay or recognition for her role. Well, I want to go to Tanya Bianc again. Her new book, Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. You know, you tell the story. Stories, Tanya, about four women who form the core of this book. Let's begin with General Angela Alinas. You describe her as a feisty, 5'4", 5'5", 54-year-old Marine with a firm handshake and more than 30 years of service. What drew you to her to profile her in your book, Tanya?
Well, I very much wanted to focus on women from a variety of ranks, from the junior enlisted all the way up to the general officer rank. And I was attracted to General Salinas' story because, you know, she was the first female Hispanic general to make it to general in the Marine Corps. And she was a seasoned servicewoman. The military that she joined as an enlisted woman in 1974 is very different than the military that she serves in.
Right.
Today as a major general in the Marine Corps. And what I really loved about her is that she founded her college's female basketball team and was the team captain.
At 5 foot tall. Yeah.
Despite being 5 foot tall.
I love that.
I knew that she had to be an incredible person. And so a lot of just her feistiness and her spirit, very talented, smart woman, and she, as a woman in the Marine Corps, she has been a woman the first woman to hold a number of positions, and she's been in a lot of jobs where she was not wanted in the Marine Corps. Only about 6% of the Marine Corps are women.
I also wanted to ask you about Sergeant Amy Stokely. She's a Marine drill instructor, and you describe her in the book as a diva in boots. Oh, why do you call her a diva in boots, Tanya?
Yes. She would always tell her recruits, and in the Marine Corps, the male and female recruits are trained separately. They're the only branch of service to do that. But it was very important to Sergeant Stokely that her young female recruits, very impressionable, understood that you can be a good Marine and a good woman. And to get that point across, Sergeant Stokely and many of the other female drill instructors wore false eyelashes, acrylic French-tipped nails. They wore lipstick. They had no problem making a recruit cry 1 minute and, you know, fixing their lipstick the next. But these are hardcore women. They all had martial arts black belts. All of them had served in Iraq or Afghanistan. A number of them, to include Sergeant Stokely, had earned the Combat Action Ribbon. Sergeant Stokely would tell her recruits, yes, we are Marines, yes, we are drill instructors, but first we are women, not men. Remember who you are. Carry yourself with pride.
That is so interesting. I'm just wondering, Airman Stephanie Holt, again from Whiteman, this notion that Tanya just brought up about how women maintain their femininity while serving in the military, how do you approach that issue?
Well, I'll have to admit, after two deployments, you become a little more feminine. Every deployment, it really does, because you are in your uniform day in and day out. And when time you come home, all you want to do is you want to doll yourself up and you want to feel like a girl again.
But when you're in combat, when you're in active service, what do? Anything?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I wear makeup every day.
Do you?
I do. It makes me feel better when I wake up and I know that I'm looking presentable.
Yeah, sure. Sergeant Davis from Fort Leavenworth, what do you do?
I was actually pleasantly surprised for both of my deployments. I was geared up, and I was in the mindset of, you know, getting dirty and probably staying dirty for a whole year and, you know, not having the amenities that I was used to. But yeah. I was pleasantly surprised to get to our location, and there were spas, nothing but little trailers, actually. Mm-hmm. But you could get a manicure and a pedicure, and a lot of us got together. Even the men got together, and they had their own little days where they would go in together and get pampered a little bit. So wasn't just us, you know, the girls going, oh, yay, there's a spa. It was, you know, them as well. But those little luxuries and things you bring from home that, you know, kind of soften the area that you're living in. I had my teddy bears for my children and, you know, little things like that. But
good for you.
It just kept me grounded. It wasn't anything that suggests that, oh, I was being, I don't know, pansy or whatnot. But.
Yep.
You know, Sergeant, when you're overseas serving in Iraq, do you find, do the men and women mingle together, or do the men and women sort of segregate out a little bit? What have you found?
No, once we hit boots on ground, it wasn't a man and woman issue. It was a soldier issue.
Really? Yeah.
And because you were in such close proximity to one another for such a long time, I mean, you're sharing holidays together. You're sharing, you know, experiences that you would normally only share with your family. With these people, you become family. So just like within a family, it wouldn't come up to that you're the weaker sex or whatnot. So it didn't come up then either.
Yeah. Tanya, what have you found as you've done your research here about women and men sort of, do they segregate themselves overseas or not really?
They can't. They cannot segregate themselves because of the mission. They have to work together. They're team members. They're on the same team. And as the service woman just said, it is, you do become part of a big family, especially in a combat zone, because everyone is far from home and everybody is going through the same thing.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the U.S. military and the announcement of an end to a 19-year ban on women in combat. That's our topic today. If you want to join our conversation, we have a few minutes left, 816-235-2888, or send us an email to updatedate@kcur.org. Tanya, you also said something very interesting about one thing the one thing that surprised you most during the course of writing your book, Undaunted. And that was that each of the four women you profiled in your book were very close to their mothers. Why did that surprise you so much?
Well, these women were all very strong, independent women, tough, driven. And it was curious to me that each one had an incredibly close relationship to their mother, to the point of calling their mom every day. And I thought it was wonderful. What I discovered was that what surprised me was that, I mean, these mothers played a critical role in their daughters' success, whether it was caring for grandchildren over an extended period of time during a deployment, being there for moral support, helping them PCS, a permanent change of station, from one posting to the next. Their mothers were there. And in General Salinas' case, her mother is now 98 years old, suffering from dementia. Her mother has lived with her since 1980, and so now the roles have reversed.
I was really touched by that, yeah. And how's that working out for her?
You know, her mom is still in good health. It's just that mentally she's deteriorated. And what's touching to me is that here you have a major general in the Marine Corps, and before she goes to work, she gets her mother up, she feeds her, she bathes her, she changes her diaper, she changes her soiled sheets. She does all of that. It's a daughter's love for a mother, and she's a general. It's humbling to me.
Sergeant Davis, can I ask, are you close to your mom?
Actually, very similar. My mother has lived with me since 2006. She was there for both my deployments, all of my PCSs, and
meaning.
They're in the household.
Here in the States while you were overseas.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And she's become an integral part of our day-to-day lives. And I couldn't see actually being as successful as I have been or being able to do the things that I have been without her.
Airman Holt, how about you?
Mine's actually a little reverse. I'm very close with my father. Mm. And being a single parent, my first deployment, my father and my stepmother had my daughter for me and kept her and took care of her while I was gone, and to this day, he is my biggest supporter. And before the show even, you know, I'm getting a pep talk from him.
Mm.
So, yes, he
is. You can tell your dad you've done just great. It's been so nice to have you here.
He's probably listening right now.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Let's go to one more phone call here. Hank from up in Canada. Hank, good morning.
Good morning.
Where are you from, Hank?
I'm from Toronto, Ontario. Well, actually, Hamilton, Ontario.
Well, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm just driving through, and I picked up this on the radio. And, you know, it's 2013. I just don't understand what the discussion is about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We have had women in combat in Canada for years. You know, they lead combat battalions. There's a radio show called Kandahar or Afghanistan. And the star of that show is a female combat commander. We have female submariners. We have female jet pilot fighters. I mean, nobody should be regulating what women can do and what they can't do. I mean, this is 2013. You know, this isn't Afghanistan. Women don't have to walk 10 feet behind men. Women are our equals. And it frustrates me. It makes me so angry, actually. I've got to pull the truck over and stop driving because I don't see that this is a discussion anymore. I think at one time we had this discussion over blacks, and we have this discussion still over people that are gay. You know, we've got to keep our nose out of people's lives and let them, you know, love who they want and be who they want and fulfill, you know.
I think we get your point, Hank. Yeah, I'm glad you called. Thank you for calling. I think he made himself pretty clear. Well, I want to thank all of you for taking time to join us today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Again, Tanya Bianca, author of Undaunted, The Real Story of America's Servicewomen in Today's Military. Tanya, thank you so much.
My pleasure. I enjoyed the conversation.
Great. Thank you. And from the Army, we had from Fort Leavenworth, we had Sergeant Nicole Davis. Sergeant, thank you, and thank you for your service. So good to have you here.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure to be here.
And from Whiteman Air Force Base on the Missouri side, Senior Airman Stephanie Holt. Airman, thanks so much for your service, and thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And again, tell your dad you did just great.
Will do.